States and its honorable court, be seated, please. Case number 10-1079 et al., American Petroleum et al., Institute of Environmental Protection. Ms. Wood, Petitioner, American Petroleum Institute et al., Mr. Jacobson, for Petitioner, Interstate Natural Gas Association of America, Mr. Rachel, responding to the PA.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Allison Wood. I represent petitioners American Petroleum Institute and the Utility Air Regulatory Group. I will be addressing today the issues related to the setting of the 1 hour national ambient air quality standard for NO2. Mr. Peterson, counsel for the Interstate Natural Gas Association of America, will be addressing on behalf of all petitioners those issues related to the implementation of the standard. This case involves EPA's establishment for the very first time of a 1 hour National Ambient Air Quality Standard, or NAAQS, for NO2. Section 109 of the Clean Air Act requires the EPA administrator to set NAAQS at the level that is requisite. The Supreme Court has interpreted this language to mean that a NAAQS must be set at the level that is no more or less stringent than necessary. Critical to this inquiry is the dose-response relationship between the pollutant and the adverse effect. In other words, at what concentration does the adverse effect on public health occur? Section 108 of the Clean Air Act also requires that NAAQS be based on the latest scientific knowledge useful in indicating the kind and extent of all identifiable effects on public health. There are two pieces of evidence in this case that are critical to demonstrating the unlawful nature of the 1 hour NO2 NAAQS. EPA claims that this is merely a case of petitioners preferring one study over another. This is simply not the case. The two studies at issue go to the very foundation of the 1 hour NAAQS and are centrally relevant to the case. The first case is a meta-analysis that was prepared by EPA and is the sole support for the 100 part per billion level at which the 1 hour NAAQS was set. The other study is the only evidence in the record that provides information on the dose response level for NO2 and shows, in fact, that there is no dose response relationship. With regard to the first study, the agency meta-analysis, a meta-analysis is a statistical analysis that is done where you analyze several different studies to try to figure out what the common themes are and the threads from those studies. It's a commonly used approach, and EPA has used it in the past in NAAQS rulemakings. However, in the past, it has always been subjected to peer review. That is a key distinction here in this case.
Well, what about this court's view of the role of the advisory committee here?
Yes, the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee, also known as CASAC. What this court has said with regard to CASAC is that EPA may deviate from CASAC, but if it does so, it needs to explain its rationale. And here, CASAC is actually very important when we discuss the agency meta-analysis.
Where is a deviation here?
There isn't a deviation when we're talking about the agency meta-analysis. There is a deviation in the second of the studies, the Goodman study.
All right, but let's be clear. No deviation insofar as the advisory committee's view.
No, but the advisory committee did not have the agency meta-analysis before it when it looked at the criteria document or integrated science assessment that was prepared under Section 108 of the Clean Air Act. What CASAC reviewed were two drafts of that document, and in those drafts, the meta-analysis did not appear. And in fact,
let's be clear. They had everything that was in the original analysis, plus the one substitute. Did it not?
No, it didn't. The drafts did not contain the agency meta-analysis at all. That appeared for the very first time in the final.
I understand, but are you saying that the advisory committee did not have the study that was substituted for the ragweed study?
Oh, I understand. What the agency meta-analysis is it is a study in its own right, however. You're correct that
Can you just answer my question?
Yes, they did have that study, right. I believe was included in the integrated scientific assessment. But what's critical here is that the agency meta-analysis is in its own right a new and separate study, and one that needed to undergo peer review under EPA's own guidelines and under the Clean Air Act. The Clean Air Act, Section 307D3, requires...
Well, let me be clear. The guidance is just that, guidance, right? And then secondly, hasn't this court recognized that the advisory committee review is tantamount to peer review?
I have not seen any case that says that CASAC review is tantamount to peer review. And with regard to...
Is there a reason it wouldn't be?
Yes, because here, part of the problem is that the agency meta-analysis, as it's presented in the final integrated scientific assessment, is merely a table. There's no information regarding how EPA conducted its analysis. It tells us that they...
That would be true whether it's sent out for outside peer review or within CASAC. My question is whether CASAC review is not an adequate... Why is it not an adequate substitute for peer review, assuming they've got the critical documents?
Well, even if you assume that CASAC review could substitute for peer review, CASAC did not actually review the meta-analysis. Why? Because it wasn't inserted until the document was final.
Didn't they review the final document?
No, they reviewed the two drafts. And then what they're claiming is the peer review is the fact that the results from that agency meta-analysis were then contained in the risk and exposure assessment.
They didn't see the final document before it went out?
I would assume they may have seen it, but they did not do any commentary on it, no.
Maybe because they thought it was all right.
But they did not, there is no explanation in the integrated scientific assessment other than just a presentation of results. And this is problematic. And as to the fact that these were only guidelines that were not followed, this court has said in Troy Corporation versus Browner that guidelines are, that EPA must follow its guidelines, that the fact that it's...
But it's not as though the guidelines say that unless a study is peer-reviewed by outside non-advisory committee...
Actually, the guideline...
The agency will never rely on it.
The guidelines incorporate in EPA's peer review policy.
Right.
And what that provides is that for major scientifically and technically based...
They would go to a peer review.
No, it says that internal peer review is acceptable only for work product not intended to support the most important decisions.
By choice. Mm-hmm. I think you'll find that qualifier somewhere.
The other key piece of evidence here is the Goodman study. And the Goodman study responds directly to a concern CASAC had. CASAC said that one of the things that was missing from the scientific evidence and that the epidemiological studies did not show was anything with regard to dose response. Goodman, which was presented to the agency in response to the proposed rule, provided information on dose response for the first time to the agency. While EPA looked at it for the limited purpose of deciding whether or not to reopen the integrated scientific assessment, it did not look at it in terms of deciding whether the level of the standard was or was not requisite. And because CASAC had expressed concern about dose response, and because this key piece of evidence came in showing that there was, in fact, no dose response relationship.
At what level? Not that. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It showed not that there was no dose response relationship, but that it failed to establish a significant dose response relationship.
Right.
It would be a much more aggressive and relevant point if it had actually established no such relationship, although I don't know that null hypothesis could ever be established.
Right. And when you have a lack of any information on that point, to then just say that we will look at this study in 5 years from now was arbitrary and capricious.
If there are five studies finding no dose response relationship and there's one that finds it, the EPA is not disempowered from acting.
No, of course not, but it has to explain its rationale.
What concentration levels do you think there are effects?
Well, I think that the past criteria documents and the epidemiological reports show that there is an effect at 200 to 300 parts per billion. And in fact, in the first two drafts of the integrated scientific assessment, before you had the agency meta-analysis come in, what those documents generally concluded was that they supported EPA's decision in 1996 not to set a short-term standard, because there were only the effects at 200 to 300 parts per billion, and there had been no change.
Do you agree with, at least as I understand the agency to say it, that we should assume that the near-road concentrations are 30 to 100% higher than the general area?
It is probably true that there, I have no reason to dispute that the near road concentrations are higher. However, what I do dispute is the fact that they say that then when you look at the tables in the risk and exposure assessment that show the epidemiological evidence and show what the risks are at various levels, those are based on modeling, not monitored data. And that modeling, it's made clear in the overview to Chapter 8 of the REA, say that they are taking into account those higher levels at the roadways. So when EPA says you shouldn't look at the 100 part per billion column, that's incorrect because really the modeling had already taken into account those roadway.
Do you acknowledge any concentration levels in the near roadway areas? Other than the 30 to 100% is just a percent of something. But as an absolute concentration level, does your side acknowledge what they would be?
I wouldn't have any knowledge as to what they would be, but do they exist? Yes.
And you agree that 30 to 100% higher, as the agency suggests, whatever that means?
I would say that the evidence in the integrated science assessment would seem to support that. But as I said, when you look, though, at overall risk from that, the risk numbers show, particularly when you take into account other pollutants. If you look at the other pollutants, if you look at ozone, particulate matter, or both, what the tables show is when those are taken into account, those other pollutants, then you have no statistically significant response.
How compelling do you view your case? There are two parts to this. There are actually more than two parts, but two major parts in my head. Effects, which you've been arguing, and the standard assuming there are effects. Mm-hmm. You're principally focusing on the first. You're saying you don't believe there are any effects.
No. What we're saying is that, you know, first...
Not none, but at a level well beyond what the agency is talking about.
We're saying that at the 100 part per billion, the only evidence to support that is a non-peer-reviewed, non-published study.
Right.
And then on the other hand, we're saying that the only information that's in the record on dose response indicates that there may not be a relationship between the two, and that when you look at the tables within the risk and exposure assessment itself, you see that when you take into account these other pollutants, that there is no statistically significant effect.
Okay, let's assume you're wrong on the effects part of it. Do you agree or disagree with the standard that they set?
I'm not sure I'm
following your... In other words, you're arguing, to start out, look, they can't show there's any impact here, except at 200 or 300. They're way below that. Assuming they're right, that their study is valid, reliable, and they've now set a standard, do you agree that that standard passes muster if they're right on the 100?
I would say that at least then, assuming that the study was right, and that we have no basis at this point to know whether it is or isn't, that's the point.
That's what assuming means.
But if you assume that it was right, then yes, at least there would be evidence in there to support that level.
And you think that their 1-hour, 100 standard passes muster?
Only if you can accept the validity of that agency meta-analysis. And
yeah, I understand that. But I heard you. I got that. There are two pieces to this. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to sort them out. And your fight, as I now understand it, is really effects, not on the standard, assuming they win on effects.
I guess, and I'm not trying to be obtuse, I'm not following you.
They have to first show that there is some relationship.
Right.
Okay?
And they have shown that with the epidemiological studies.
You say they're wrong. Let's assume we agree they have shown a relationship. Okay? That their studies all pass muster for whatever reason. Let's assume that. I know you don't agree with that. The next thing they do, having shown the relationship, is to set a standard.
Correct.
If you lose on your effects argument, do you then say, well, we don't have any real argument on the standard that they've set?
No, because then what we would argue is that when you are determining whether or not a standard is necessary, as Whitman said in the Supreme Court, you have to look at the actual risks. And here what you see is that as is air quality, the risk is actually greater at where they set the standard at 100 parts per billion than it is at as-is air quality, meaning it wasn't necessary to do it all, because as-is air quality is better and has less risk than what they were showing.
In the high peak areas?
Yes, overall.
No, in the high peak, all they're focusing on is the high peak areas.
And they're focusing on those high peak areas by setting a standard that goes over the entire area.
Yeah, I understand. I think the assumption probably is, well, we know the rest of the area is where it is, which is relatively low, meets the national standard. So we don't assume that's going anywhere. So the question is, how do we deal with the high peak areas, right?
Correct.
Do you agree that the 100 is right or wrong? I'm not understanding your argument. I look back at it several times. I'm not understanding what you're meaning to say on the standard, assuming you lose on your effects, which is your main argument.
You're not understanding then why you can't put it at the 100 parts
per billion. I'm asking you what your argument is with respect to
that. Well, think about it this way. You have to have, for a standard to be needed, to be necessary, there has to be an actual threat of a risk.
All right. Fine. We've already gotten you to assume that they are correct.
Okay.
So 100 or higher is a risk.
Right.
Okay?
But when you look at what that actual risk plays out in Table 9-2 of the Risk and Exposure Assessment, the risks at 100 part per billion are actually higher than they are right now at as-is air quality, meaning the standard isn't needed.
But you're talking about the area-wide standard. They're talking about the peak areas.
And I would say that if you were really concerned about peak areas, then perhaps a national ambient air quality standard, which is a regional standard, might not be the best method in which to address the problem.
I'm
not sure where it gets you.
Yeah. Why don't we hear from your colleague?
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. And we'll give you some time in the rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Bill Peterson. I, too, am appearing for the petitioners. I will reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The Clean Air Act forbids any construction of a new large source and any physical change to an existing large source without first getting a pre-construction permit, a prevention of significant deterioration, or PSD permit. Issuing a new NACS can dramatically change the questions that must be answered to grant such a permit and the difficulty of answering them. My argument concerns how EPA must implement and reconcile three statutory provisions that bear on this task. These provisions are all in Section 165 of the Clean Air Act. They are, first, a requirement to specify by regulation the models to be used to predict the air quality impact of a permit-seeking source. Second, a requirement that all PSD permit applications be decided within 1 year of filing a complete application. And third, a general requirement that all such permits show NACS compliance. How should EPA reconcile these three provisions? In this case, at least, the agency's answer is clear. The NACS requirement applies immediately, automatically, and without process to any new NACS, but EPA, in its sole discretion, once more without process, can, if it so chooses, adjust the way this requirement applies to take account of the lack of applicable modeling tools or a danger that the one-year deadline will not be met. This cannot be the law.
Well, Congress. What do you understand to have been the agency's comment regarding implementation? I mean, first of all, that's not part of their obligation in setting the NAC itself, and that there is no final order regarding implementation here.
That is their position. They declared in the final preamble that the NACs will be applicable to permit applicants. And then they dismissed as irrelevant the comments they got pointing out the inadequacy of the modeling tools that are available. What that means, Congress enacted the modeling by rule requirement and the one-year deadline for the benefit of the regulated. Under EPA's position, those provisions would be a dead letter whenever a new NAAQS is issued until such time as the agency decided to do something about them. Legal right would become agency grace. We claim that regardless of what EPA said its decision was in the preamble, we claim that the true legal view of the matter is that EPA must balance and reconcile up front these three statutory factors.
All right, well, help me on the ground. All right, EPA announces this new NAAQ.
Yes.
What happens to your clients?
They
have to file an application, right?
No, this is interesting. They must immediately begin to show in their permit applications that they will comply with the new NAAQS. Even a one-hour standard is much harder to model than an annual standard.
You say they have to show in their applications.
Yes.
All right. So they have to show in their applications how they are going to operate consistent with this new NAAQ.
They have to show by a mathematical model that the emissions from their proposed facility will not cause a violation of the new one-hour NAAQS.
And EPA has acknowledged that sometimes there have to be adjustments, et cetera, and some of the comments say there have to be adjustments here. My only point is, can you really argue here that as a matter of legal fact, the requirements for the PSD come into effect immediately such that your clients know exactly what they have to do? EPA says none of that's been decided.
But the law says it has to be decided. If you look at
the section you cited says by regulation.
Yes.
After an application.
No, by regulation generically up front.
So EPA has to do both simultaneously?
EPA has to at least evaluate when a new NAAQS is issued, whether the modeling tools that were developed for other purposes, for other NAAQS, are sufficiently accurate in this new context to allow the one-year deadline to be met and to avoid unreasonable burdens on the regulated. And in fact, that has not happened. I refer you to EPA's Avenal decision at pages 77 to 78, which has a vivid description of the...
But isn't that EPA's point? It hasn't happened. There's no final decision for this court to review in that regard.
When EPA said in its preamble, the standard will apply to PSD permits immediately, that was a final decision. EPA has not always done that. EPA has very often coupled its statements that the standard would apply to PSD permitting with a grandfathering provision or with an adjustment in the modeling requirements. In fact, every one of EPA's examples on page 49 of their brief on how this is a long-standing established policy involves a NAAQS in which EPA made one or the other of those adjustments.
When you quoted the the rulemaking saying major new and modified sources applying for PSD permits will be required?
Yes.
You include the word will initially be required to demonstrate. What do you make of that?
It is not clear, but I think what it has to mean is initially means up front. The way the PSD system works, when you file your permit application, it has to be accompanied by a modeling demonstration that the standard will be met. And since these are highly technical decisions, there's often a long informal back and forth between the source and the regulators as to whether the this modeling is acceptable. And unless the ground rules have been scrubbed beforehand, it can go on forever, which is exactly what happened in the Avenal case.
Could it also, though, refer to the presumptive applicability of the new NAAQS, awaiting such decisions as they've made in the past when they've needed to grandfather or postpone application where there's no standard or protocol available and the surrogate is used?
If that were the approach, it would mean that the relief that Congress meant sources to have on the government's time at all times when the PSD system is operating in terms of a clearly specified model and in terms of a reliable one-year deadline would in fact be granted, if at all, only on their time. In other words, the EPA would say, as it did here, well, okay, new standard, it's in effect, and then they would play catch-up to fix it later. That's not what Congress intended. Congress intended those problems to be looked at up front.
Well, in the cases that were referenced at 49 in the brief, at least in some of them, including the post hoc Avenal matter, it was the matter of the party seeking a permit that brought to the attention of the agency the problems and requested special treatment. Right? It wasn't the agency going out in some rulemaking and trying to anticipate all the problems that might arise in permitting.
The relief given in prior NAAQS was generic, either a generic grandfather provision announced as a generally applicable provision, or what the briefs call the CITES memo, which was a generic policy of using a surrogate modeling method.
I understand that when they made an announcement, although Avenal, I think, was facility-specific, but the other two at least, when they made the announcement, they made it generally applicable, but was it not in response to a particular problem arising being brought to their attention by a particular permit applicant?
Those problems were brought to EPA's attention here and now in that EPA got comments from several different people on the inadequacy of the modeling tools, and I don't see... It seems to me far more faithful to the statutory purpose for EPA to address that question generically up front in the foundational rulemaking than wait until problems which may be totally predictable actually arise and have to be dealt with in a stern chase.
It's going to take quite a clear mandate or direction from the Congress to say, for the court to say, they can't manage their business in the order in which they think they should.
Well, I think you have it there in the requirement that EPA specify by regulation, which means generically, the models to be used in implementing air quality standards. And we even quoted...
CITES memorandum come under that heading?
I think the CITES memorandum arguably was not consistent with that, but of course it gave the relief that people wanted.
It wasn't embodied in a regulation.
What?
It was not embodied in a regulation, was it?
That's true.
And the grandfathering, was that embodied in a regulation?
Sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't, is my understanding.
And Avenal is totally facility-specific, is it not?
Avenal is facility-specific, and as such, it is an inadequate response to the problem that we're bringing to your attention.
All right, thank you. Why don't we hear from... EPA.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Norman Rave from the Department of Justice representing EPA. With me at council table are David Orlin and Melina Williams from EPA's Office of General Counsel. Perhaps since we've just been talking about it, I will start with the PSD issue, unless the court would prefer me to start with the standard.
I would.
You would prefer me to start with the standard? Okay, let's start with the standard then. The standard, In considering the challenges to the standard, Your Honors, it's important to consider the entire record upon which EPA based the decision. The petitioners have focused on one very narrow issue, the meta-analysis that was done of the laboratory studies and the study that was completed by their own expert on those same studies. But the entire body of evidence the agency considered is much broader. And most importantly, it contains a large body of epidemiological studies. And in fact, the agency relied primarily on the epidemiological studies for the determination that the standard needed to be resolved, because those studies show that even in areas that are attaining the current standard, that there are elevated hospital admissions and emergency room visits associated with exposures to NO2. And that real-world evidence demonstrates that the current standard is inadequate, because we're still seeing clearly clinically significant health effects, i.e.
How many areas did those studies cover?
I don't know the exact number, but there are several dozen studies completed in a variety of different areas. And they did consider EPA, you know, this question of co-pollutants was raised. EPA addressed the issue and found that for three reasons it wasn't an issue. First of all, the coherence and consistency of the studies across a variety of areas. And that was a criteria that the court in the American Trucking case during promulgation of the PM standard agreed was adequate for the agency to determine that the epidemiological studies demonstrated an effect from PM 2.5. Secondly, a number of the studies did use multi-pollutant models. And even with those multi-pollutant models, the studies demonstrated a relationship between levels of NO2 and health effects. And third, we have the clinical studies, which are the studies that petitioners are relying on. And what the clinical studies do is they reinforce the conclusions from the epidemiological studies, because the clinical studies demonstrate a clear relationship between NO2, because that is the specific and only pollutant that's being addressed, and a biological response.
What did the studies tell you specifically about the concentration levels above which there's risk?
The studies showed that there were responses down to levels of 100 parts per billion. That result does not come from the meta-analysis. That result comes from the actual underlying studies, where the people were exposed in a chamber to a particular level, the levels down to 100 parts per billion. They were then challenged with some kind of irritant or agent, and then the change in their lung responsiveness was measured. And those showed a biological response down to a level of 100 parts per billion. CASAC reviewed that evidence. Petitioners speak only about the integrated science assessment, but EPA's analysis of the clinical studies was also detailed in the REA, risk and exposure assessment, the drafts of which were reviewed by CASAC. And CASAC did have available to it at the time it did that review. It had the final ISA was available to it at that time. So when CASAC reviewed the risk and exposure assessment, which is a document that was completed after the ISA, when it reviewed those drafts, that did detail the agency's meta-analysis, which is really just taking the existing data and pulling it together in one place. CASAC specifically said that the clinical studies demonstrated an effect in conjunction with the epidemiological studies, and CASAC recommended that a short-term standard be based no higher than 100 parts per billion.
Let me see if you can help me with your numbers, because I must say they're perplexing.
Okay.
That may be my little mind at work, but in any event, let me try. You suggest in several places that your assumption is that the concentrations, this rule is because of the near road problem.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right. The concentration in the near road areas are 30 to 100% higher than the area average, right? The area-wide concentration.
The area-wide concentration. That's okay. Correct. That's the.
So when doing little math, you're pretty much acknowledging that the area-wide concentrations are routinely below 53 ppg.
PPB.
PPB.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if I do my math, that means the worst that we're looking at in the road concentrations is no more than 100 PPB.
Not quite true, Your Honor, because there's a distinction between averages and individual exposures.
Well, I'm not figuring out how you're working that through, because you continue to use the most perplexing, and you reassert it over and over again. Using your 100 PPB, you'd expect the area-wide concentrations to be 50 to 75. You've just reversed it and gone back the other way from what I just did. You've taken 100% on 30% going down. What I did was to take the 130% going up.
Yeah,
but what I'm trying to ask you is, the other side does not seem to be pressing this, but I can't figure it out. I don't know what you're talking about. You end up with your assumptions with concentration levels in the near road area that are not at risk concentrations.
The problem, Your Honor, is the difference between averages. You can get an average of 50 by having some number, or an average of 100, for example, by having some numbers at 200 and some numbers at 50. And what we're
But if all of your area-wide numbers, if I'm reading your information correctly, all of your area-wide numbers are below the 53.
But those are averages, Your Honor. Those are daily averages.
Daily averages or yearly?
Annual average. Well, I think they're an annual average of daily averages, but yes, they're an annual average.
Okay, well, they're annual average. I don't know how you run numbers like this then, given what you're saying, without knowing what the actual numbers are in the near road areas and knowing how large the near road areas are in relationship to the whole area. I don't know how you get the conclusion. I mean, I can't run it in my whole head. I've tried it 100 times. I don't know how you get it. You don't know the size of the near road areas in relationship to the whole area. You don't know what the actual concentrations are in the near road areas. And the only numbers you're giving me suggest, I understand they're averages, that's all we're working with, you don't put yourself in a picture that looks like risk.
Well, the difference is, Your Honor, that what we're looking at, the revised standard, the one-hour standard, is based on every single hour. And it's so what it's saying is that exposures for 1 hour over 100, and what the statistics demonstrate, as opposed to an average of 50, which has some higher and some lower. I understand the numbers are confusing, Your Honor. So, you know, an average of 50 overall, we'll end up with an average of around 100.
I understand.
But that average of 100
is some below and some
near the road. Right.
But what do I know about the near road concentrations? Where are the figures? You couldn't monitor them, so you have to guess?
I believe there are some monitors. I don't have that information right at my fingertips, Your Honor. But what we do know, Your Honor, is that the epidemiological studies, which demonstrate that there is a problem. We know there is a health problem, and it seems to be it's associated with short-term elevated levels of NO2.
Now, what I'm asking is, do we have any real information about what those short-term elevations are, how large the areas are that they affect, how long they go on? I mean, you're giving me gross numbers, and I look at the gross numbers, they don't run. They don't make any sense, and I understand their averages.
Right.
But you're using them. You're using them when you do this. If we use our 100 ppb, then our area-wide concentrations are going to be 50 to 75. You're doing it. You're just doing it coming back.
That's right,
I'm saying, okay, I'm going to do it forward,
but
and
we
it
go
don't
beyond
work.
That, Your Honor. The REA, the risk and exposure analysis, does break it down and model exposures to short-term numbers based on both as-is data and other data, and demonstrates, give me just a minute, and does discuss how often numbers much higher will be. At JA646, Your Honor, for instance, there is a discussion of the modeling analysis showing that.
Are these real numbers or modeled?
They're modeled numbers.
They're models. I'm asking you, do you have any real numbers? I don't know how you assess risk if you don't know what's there.
Well, we put together different pieces of evidence, Your Honor. We put together the epidemiological studies, and we put together the evidence showing throwing health effects.
I'm just trying to figure out, does your 100 ppb standard make any sense? Now, the best thing you got going for you is the other side doesn't appear to challenge it. I asked them that three times, and they don't seem to go after that figure. They're going after your studies. I'm trying to understand, assuming that your meta-studies and other studies pass muster, does your standard make any sense? And I honestly have, even listening to you now, you're not making any sense to me. Because you're using the averages, and you've stated this 50 to 75, it will result in 50 to 75 at least 5, 6, 7 times in your brief. So you're doing exactly what you're telling me I can't do. Right. I'm just doing it the other way, which makes you look bad, because it makes it look like there's no risk. If you go 30 to 100% up from a number below 53, you don't get to 100.
Right, but you...
You barely get to 100.
You have 100 as an average, Your Honor. You're going to have individual one-hour peaks much higher than that, and that's where the risk comes from.
And I ask you, where are they, and what do we know about them? Nothing.
Again, like I said, Your Honor, because petitioners didn't really raise that issue.
Oh, okay, so then your answer to my question is we don't know anything.
I don't know standing here.
Okay, well, you're honestly fine. That answers my question.
With other information.
And I'm not sure what their explanation is, because I was trying to figure out how you're joining this issue, because you sure aren't giving any data on this. I understand modeling notions. I understand what you're trying to say, but what you've honestly said to me now, frankly, Judge, we have the faintest idea.
Well, I said I don't personally know.
Well, you have to know. You're the counsel, and you have to know what's in the record.
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's no answer to me to say, well, I don't know personally. But then I should say to you, sit down then.
But let me point out, Your Honor.
Come on, really, you don't have the data, is what you're saying.
I don't personally, standing right here, I'm not aware of that.
Your side doesn't have the data.
That I would have to go look back into, Your Honor.
Okay.
But let me point out what we do have, Your Honor, that I know we have. First of all, KSAC recommended an hourly standard of 80 to 100 parts per billion.
They don't have the data either.
The data.
Why does that matter? They don't have the data either.
But they do have the data. And the data we have are the chamber study. We have the analytical
study. No, I'm talking about the areas, the at-risk areas. This is a rule about at-risk areas, near-road areas. So one always wonders, and I understood as soon as I started reading this, you don't monitor those areas, so you don't have data. So I'm wondering how you're getting these numbers and throwing them around so convincingly when you don't have any information on them. But then I realize the other side's not really challenging it. They're challenging the meta-study. I'm just curious, who's relying on what?
Well, again, we're relying on the epidemiological studies.
What do they tell me about the at-risk areas and what those concentration levels are?
And they tell you that there is a risk from levels in areas that are currently meeting the standard, that people are going to the hospital and people are going to the emergency room based on exposures to NM. And the best data we have is that those exposures exist at least down to 100 parts per billion.
But we know those people came from the at-risk areas?
I don't know that we know that.
That's the whole point. I don't know what that does for me. You say people go to the hospital. Well, they may be coming from the areas that are meeting your standards. So what am I supposed to do with that?
Well, because the areas that are meeting the standard, what we know is that at these levels down to 100 parts per billion, we get exposures and we get risks. And we know that we have those levels near roadways.
You think you have them?
Well, I'm fairly certain that we have them, Your Honor. I believe that...
If we had looked, we would have found them, is what you're saying.
Well, certainly if we had looked. And I'm sure there is some data, Your Honor. I'm just not familiar with it.
Okay.
And you're not familiar with it because it's not in the JA. We didn't put it in the JA because it's not challenged.
Because it was not challenged. That's correct, Your Honor.
Right. Okay, I got it.
The record here is immense.
You've answered my questions. I now have a better picture of what's going on.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, so you were talking about that you essentially had all this other evidence, and so that the petitioner's challenge to the meta-study
and
the Goldstone study don't detract from, I think your brief uses the word, the robust administrative record that exists.
That's right, Your Honor. They're only a part of it, and the meta-analysis doesn't, first of all, it was reviewed by KSAC, and we believe that KSAC's review, because it was reviewed as part of the REA, is certainly equivalent to peer review. They did their analysis. They recommended a standard no higher than 100 parts per billion. It was discussed in the proposal, so there's certainly opportunity for comment on it. So it certainly met any requirements. Moreover, there's no new data in the meta-analysis. The meta-analysis simply uses data from other published peer-reviewed studies, and mostly the data from the same data that was looked at in the Follansbee paper, which was peer-reviewed. And it simply does what EPA is supposed to do in these periodic reviews, which is to look at the existing science and come to some conclusion. And it simply takes the individual data from the studies and pulls it together and divides it by concentration level just to get a clearer picture of what the studies say, but you could come to the same conclusion by simply looking at the list of data. All of them show that exposure, 60 to 70% of asthmatics, and these are not people with severe asthma, exposed to levels as low as 100 parts per billion, experience lung responses. Petitioners don't really contest that data. In fact, Dr. Goldman doesn't contest that fact. What Dr. Goldman says is that there's no dose-response relationship. But there's no requirement that there be a dose-response relationship. And EPA considered the analysis in the Goldman paper, and its conclusion was that the studies that Dr. Goldman are trying to compare are too disparate. Because what she's taking is, she's not taking one study with, you know, the same investigators, the same techniques, the same group of people that are exposed to sequentially higher levels of NO2. She's taking a bunch of different studies with different challenges, different investigators, different methodologies, and trying to compare them and saying there's no comparison. But EPA's conclusion was the studies are simply too disparate for that to mean anything, for that kind of analysis.
But you have to be assuming there's a dose-response relationship to make sense of your operation here on the exposure level, right?
Well, there may not be, but we know is that down to at least 100 parts per billion, there is a response.
Right.
We don't have to define
it necessarily
how much
a linear assumption to the origin.
It may not be linear. It may be a threshold. Maybe some threshold, and then beyond that, everybody's the same. But so we don't need to establish a dose response to know that at least at 100 parts per billion and above, we see a response. And that response is consistent with the data from the epidemiological studies showing health effects occurring in areas that meet the annual standard. So to turn to the PSD issue, EPA's position, as I think the court understands, is that there is no requirement for EPA to act in order for these statutory requirements that the permittees have to address the new NAAQS. There are regulations that define the modeling that must be used, and petitioners never really argue that to the contrary. I mean,
what does initially mean here?
Initially, I think, is distinguishing the requirement to model showing they're going to meet the NAAQS with another requirement of PSD that you demonstrate that you're not consuming the increment.
And you're not.
There's something called an increment, a certain sort of total amount of a pollutant that can be sort of consumed in an attainment area. It's called an increment. It's another completely separate requirement of getting a PSD permit. And that requirement does require EPA to do further rulemaking, to establish a particular increment for the NO2. And that requirement is not immediately effective with the statute, because there is a requirement that EPA do some rulemaking. So this is distinguishing between modeling to demonstrate that you're not going to cause an exceedance of the NO2 max and this more stringent requirement that you not consume what's called the increment.
So the first submission is going to have to include the modeling to show that there's no exceedance.
That's correct. And a number of people have done that. There have been a number of permits issued that where people have, it's not in the record, but just as a factual matter, EPA, the states have issued NO2 permits, have issued permits since the NO2 NAAQS became effective, where people have made that demonstration. So it's not impossible to do.
Is it administered by the states?
It can be administered with EPA review. In some cases, EPA, most states it is administered by the states. Avanol was a case where EPA decided on a case-specific basis that grandfathering would be appropriate. that because of the time that the permit had been in play and the issues involved, that it would be appropriate to excuse in that particular case. And as I think the court was recognizing, there's nothing in the statute that says that EPA cannot proceed on a case-by-case basis to make that determination.
165, what is it, C1 says that the application has to, the permit has to, that permittee has to meet all applicable NAAQS.
That's right, Your Honor.
And grandfathering says, well, maybe not.
That's right, Your Honor.
Not so, it says.
EPA believes that it, and that's an issue I know the intervener's raised. I don't think the court has to address that particular issue to decide this case, whether EPA has authority to grandfather or not. But
and we don't have to reach it, why?
Because I think either way, petitioner's argument isn't correct. Whether EPA has authority or not, it's still, there's still no requirement that EPA exercise that authority at the time it issues the NAAQS, which is, I believe, petitioner's argument. Petitioner's argument has been a little unclear to me. But
well, didn't you argue that there wasn't a final agency action on this?
There isn't. That's correct, Your Honor. There is no final agency action because EPA has, first of all, the statement that EPA said that facilities that you were just referring to, that the facilities have to demonstrate compliance with the NAAQS is a statutory requirement. And so it was simply reciting the statutory requirement. And secondly, EPA, in response to the comments that the petitioner's counsel mentioned about the modeling, said it would address the issue as it came up. And in fact, the EPA has issued guidances. It's reviewed permit applications. It acted in Avenal on a case-by-case basis. So, so whether, you know, the EPA has the authority to grandfather or not, they certainly did not have the obligation that petitioners posit to address that issue at the time it issued the NAAQS.
I'm not sure why that's not a final agency action, merely because you reserve in a final agency action the possibility of considering things later. Doesn't make it any less a final agency action.
Well, Your Honor, it doesn't have any legal effect. If the agency simply says we're going to decide that issue later.
Well, it has a legal effect in saying that this is a standard to be applied now. When you make your first submissions, this is what it has to include. You just answered Judge Ginsburg and said, yes, that's what has to be in.
Right, Your Honor, but that's a matter that's something that happens by action of law, not by any action of the agency. It's not like the agency.
Well, but there's
a
rule in place. You've adopted the rule and you've applied it across the board, including to these types of petitioners, and say, yes, it applies to you. And we're saying to you, contrary to what you want us to say, that your initial applications have to include this information. That sounds as final as it could possibly be. The fact that we might consider things later on is an entirely different matter, but you've established a new rule and applied it to them and said it takes effect now and any applications that come in have to include, the initial applications have to cover what we've said.
Well, certainly the establishment of the NAAQS is a final agency action.
Yeah, and applied it to them.
Well, I guess our position is, Your Honor, is that the statute applies it to them. And that if we had said nothing, it would still be applicable. I mean, if we had simply not addressed the issue at all, the same rule would apply.
But
that this
the issue you've addressed is the new standard.
But even if we had said nothing, Your Honor, the new standard would still apply to these permit applications.
What is final is there's a new standard. And then whether you want to say, oh, and incidentally, the statute requires you to do something, there's a new standard that applies to them. It's a final action.
Well, maybe I'm misunderstanding your question, Your Honor, but certainly.
I'm a petitioner. You just took action against me. It's absolutely final. I have to meet a certain standard.
Well, certainly the standard is final, Your Honor.
Well, that's what they're saying. It's a final.
Well, I thought the argument was a little different than maybe Judge Edwards does. As I understand it, there's no one disagrees that the new NAAQS is a final agency action.
No.
The petitioners are saying your observation, or what you're saying, your statement that this initially they'll have to meet the standard in their submissions for PSD permits, you're saying is just an observation about the wallpaper. This is the background law. It's one of the implications of what you're doing. And it would be true whether it's nothing new, and it's your longstanding position and an observation about it.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly how we view it. And that's why we believe that statement is not final.
I mean, that occasioned an argument that it isn't your longstanding position. And
that's correct. And then, so even if it is reviewable, it clearly is our longstanding position. We've We stated it.
Well, I'm still, even reposed, I don't know how it's not final. You're saying this is what our position is. It doesn't matter whether you're saying it's coming from the law. They disagree with your interpretation of the law.
Well,
you're saying, and it must, and your initial applications must include this. And then you say, well, but it's not final because that's in the law. I don't know where you get that from.
It's not a question of whether it's in the law. It's whether it is in part, but it's whether it has any incremental effect on their obligations.
That's right, Your Honor. Right? I mean, there's two
criteria. If you said that, as always, applications are to be submitted to regional offices, there's nothing new in that.
That's right, Your Honor. The same thing. I mean, there are two criteria for something to be final.
Unless I disagree with your as usual.
Well, that's right.
But well, that's the whole point, so it's fine.
No, they have to be right about it. Not
well, they have to be right about it. I mean, there has to be, there's two criteria for final agency action.
I think we're going around in circles.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
Some danger, we might catch our tail.
That's right.
Petitioners, do you want a few minutes? You're going to have to respond on both issues?
No, unless the court has more questions on my point, I will make one point on my issue and then turn it over to Ms. Wood to discuss.
All right, so you're going to speak on implementation.
Yes, I am.
All right.
The one thing I'm going to say is the relief we ask on implementation is, of course, for this court to say that EPA cannot require permit applicants to demonstrate compliance with the one-hour NACs until it has, by rule, with notice and comment, concluded that the modeling tools to do that are available and that the one-year deadline will be met.
Well, and what are you distinguishing, implementation as opposed to what?
I'm not sure I understand.
You said you're addressing implementation.
Yes.
As opposed to what? What do you
mean? As opposed to the science and the record evidence behind the standard.
But not as opposed to the applicability of the standard.
No, that is my issue. Should we get this relief, not one source that currently under EPA's interpretation has to go through PSD review would avoid PSD review. PSD review is tagged to the level of NOx emissions. Those would not change. The technology requirements of that source would not change. It would still have to install BACT. It would have to make a demonstration of compliance with the annual NAC standard. The only thing it wouldn't have to do is show compliance with the one-hour NACs where we think the modeling tools are not available. Thank you.
All right, so let me just be very, very clear. The NAC takes effect.
Yes.
And in your view, then EPA does a rulemaking and says models 1, 2, and 3 are appropriate. Then your client comes in using either models 1, 2, and 3 and applies for a permit.
Yes.
EPA grants the permit.
Yes.
Suppose the permit is granted in year 3, all right, with year 1 being when the NAC has become effective, all right? Now, what does your client have to show? Is your argument that your client only has to show going forward from the regulation that it's in compliance? Because I thought your last statement was no, that once the regulation comes out and says models 1, 2, and 3 are appropriate, your client still has to come in the application and show that using one of those models, you will not have an exceedance going back as of.
Once EPA has determined, as you say, that models 1, 2, and 3 are applicable, are appropriate for showing compliance with the one-hour NACs, then any permit application filed after the effective date of that regulation will have to use those models to show compliance. But
compliance as of what date?
Compliance as of the construction of the source. We're talking about something that hasn't happened yet. It's a source that's going to be built in the future or modified, so all you can do is model it. And in fact, yeah, let me stop there.
So if you cannot do the modeling?
Yes.
Wouldn't you tell EPA there's a problem here?
Well,
we need some relief because you have not yet developed EPA a model that will.
Well, I am here doing that.
I'm sorry?
I am here doing that.
understand that, and if you lose here, you'll be at the EPA doing that.
That is true, but that would mean for each permit applicant who tries with the current inadequate modeling tools to show compliance, there will be years, and in fact there have been years, of back and forth and consultant fees and delays in the project because we're sorting out on a case-by-case basis what should have been sorted out generically, sorted out at least in a rough-cut fashion. Nothing is perfect, but in a rough-cut fashion up front in a notice and comment process.
Thank you. All right, counsel for petitioner.
Your Honor, I see that the time ran.
Well, I said I would give you a few minutes, okay, if you need them.
I'll be very fast, Your Honor. Just a couple of things. To Judge Ginsburg's point just a moment ago about whether, you know, any relief on the implementation point had been sought, a petition for reconsideration was filed with the agency. The agency's never acted on it.
Reconsideration of in this proceeding?
Yes, of the final rule here, and particularly bringing up the issues with regard to PSD. All areas do meet the annual standard currently now, Judge Edwards. EPA also said that Follansbee was peer-reviewed and that their agency meta-analysis is really just Follansbee. Then I would ask the court to question then why Follansbee led to a determination in 1996 that the annual standard was sufficient to protect public health.
Well, they're going to say all these epidemiological studies since 1996.
The epidemiological studies do not give the dose response. And again, when it was only the epidemiological studies in the integrated scientific assessment in the first and second drafts, the conclusion reached in those drafts was that there was nothing to change the determination that the annual standard had been met.
I think, in fairness, Ms. Wood, their answer would be that you're talking about the area-wide number. I mean, and you're not joining issue on that. They said it over and over again, and that's the case. This rule is not about the area-wide concentration, so that's not inconsistent with the prior study.
Right, and Judge Edwards, I would also like to, you know, confirm, as you posited, that we did not make the argument that you were making.
I had known that before I spent all that time running numbers.
I wish I had thought of it. The last thing I'd like to say is that EPA might have been able to say, as they do, that it's within their discretion to ignore the dose response information if there had been no evidence of it and then come up with a, you know, next best. But because CASAC expressed concern and because evidence did come in on the dose response relationship, it was arbitrary and capricious for them
to ignore it.
All they did was look at whether it warranted reopening the integrated scientific assessment. They did not take it into account in setting the level of the NACs. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, we'll take a brief, short recess.